Hello, I'm Marlene Saeed. This is Counting the Cost on Al Jazeera, your weekly look at the world of business and economics. This week, working from home, office, or a mixture of both, bosses and workers differ over the future of the workplace. Is remote working here to stay, and are companies ready to make that shift? Also this week, employees are trying to turn the tables and take their power back at work. But the global economy faces a bleak outlook. So could the balance shift towards employers? Global employee management and well-being were rising for nearly a decade, but now they are stagnant. So what is driving unhappiness at work? And what makes an ideal working environment? The pandemic pushed companies worldwide into an unplanned experiment of remote working to keep businesses going after strict safety measures were imposed. Now that employees realize that working from home is possible, many are reluctant to go back to the office, or at least not full time. Around one quarter of workers globally would quit or start looking for another job if they were told to return to the workplace 5 days a week. That's according to a survey by a group of economists. The study also says workers would take a 5% pay cut to keep the option of working from home. Employees in countries where commutes are long prefer the remote working option. In India and China, for example, commute times average more than 90 minutes, almost double the length of US workers. Women who are more likely to be primary caregivers for children or other family members value working from home much more than men. Another survey by Microsoft shows that bosses and workers disagree about productivity when working from home. While 87% of workers felt they worked as or more efficiently from home, 80% of managers disagreed. We've done our own little survey in the United States and Turkey. Let's listen to what workers there had to say.
I think just in general, the topic of working remotely is really important in our culture right now because a lot of people need flexibility to raise their children and to have healthy families. So I love the shift that's happened. And I also really like what I do, which is very one-on-one, of course, but having flexibility has been critical to this stage of my life and being able to be a single mom.
Flexibility of working at home is great because you can play around with your time, but I really miss the other part. So I guess at this point it would have to be sort of a mix, but I wish it would be like 3 days in the office and maybe two out.
I personally don't have any pressure to go back, and I think it's been really beneficial to me. I think a lot of people feel that way. I'm fortunate to be able to work from home, and it's given my life like a bit of a better boost in some ways because it's a lot easier to, work-life balance is a lot easier to deal with working from home.
I think the office is more comfortable. My house is close to my work, so it's not an issue. The working environment is important for work quality. Even if your salary is adequate, you will be unable to perform well if your working conditions are deplorable.
I prefer working from home because I'm constantly on the computer. All of our meetings and discussions with colleagues and managers take place online. I don't believe face-to-face work is necessary, at least not for a long time.
It's not just about the workplace. Workers are also demanding flexible working hours. A shorter work week is now being explored as the future of employee productivity. The 9-to-5 workday used to be a standard for all employees. Now, many countries like Belgium, the United Kingdom, Iceland, and Sweden are experimenting the 4-day work schedule. Employees would work 4 days a week while getting paid the same and earning the same benefits, but with the same workload. Joining me now from Preston in the United Kingdom is Adrian Wright. He is the director of the Institute for Research into Organisations, Work and Employment at the Lancashire School of Business and Enterprise. Thank you for joining the programme. What do you think are the biggest or more surprising trends you've noticed in the world of work since the pandemic started?
I think, firstly, the most important and meaningful change in the world of work is the difference in terms of where people work and how people are working. I think since the pandemic, obviously, remote working and hybrid working has grown significantly, where people are choosing to work in different ways, often remotely, or more often in a hybrid working environment where people are choosing to work part from home and also part from the office. But I think also a real big change in the way people are working, or what people want from work, is to prioritise health and well-being and flexibility in the workplace. So that might be working different types of hours to suit personal circumstances, and really thinking carefully about issues such as burnout, stress and mental health and well-being.
Working from home, as you say, clearly has become popular with workers, but not all employees surely do want to work from home, do they? I mean, personally, I know I prefer that boundary between my work life and my home life.
Sure, of course. And obviously, different employees have different circumstances. What's really, really important in the world of work, and what's really important for employers, is to think about the personal circumstances of their employees and offer work environments and work conditions that suit those personal circumstances. With the pandemic and returning to work after the pandemic, people want a lot more flexibility, and people would like to work much more on their own terms. So it's about organisations offering that sort of flexibility to suit personal circumstances.
Are we seeing the shift towards working from home across all sectors, or does it tend to be more white-collar workers?
Well, obviously, dependent on the sector, it does depend on how possible working from home is. So certainly in professional sectors, or sectors that are IT-based or computer-based, of course, people can work at home more than, say, in retail or hospitality and those types of sectors. But I think also what we're seeing is a change in model in terms of businesses and what they're offering, where the digital infrastructure is becoming in place, where organisations are offering different options in terms of not just working from home or working in the office, but also virtual hubs or different environments where people can come to work in different places at different times.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. That's as technology improves, that is clearly becoming more and more of a thing. I mean, tell us a bit more about it.
So what we've seen prior to the pandemic to a certain extent, but post-pandemic, is the rise in digital infrastructure, where organisations are using digital technologies to connect employees in different ways. And in a physical context, these are things like co-working spaces, which have seen a dramatic rise over the past 5 to 10 years, but certainly post-pandemic. But also organisations and large organisations thinking about physical proximity in a different way. For example, having office hubs in different cities where employees can connect to, really removing employees from what was one physical, one office workspace to a variety of different approaches in order to meet the different needs of employees and stay flexible.
We've talked a lot about what employees want. What is it that employers want? Are they resisting, especially now that the pandemic is over, the whole working from home concept?
Well, I think working from home requires employers to have a different mindset. It requires trust. And to a certain extent, it requires a release of control from how traditional work was done within organisations, and a different style of management. So therefore, bosses and employers really need to think about how they can be flexible and change their approach to management in order to get the most out of the workforce, but crucially also provide the workforce with the right environment that they're happy with. Because as we've seen, individuals and employees are really considering their place in work and what they want from work, and employers have to adapt.
What about the notion of the 9-to-5 workday or the 5-day week? Is that going to become a thing of the past? I mean, I know we have some countries already experimenting on the 4-day week.
Yeah, so, I mean, companies are really looking at modernising how we're working, and we need to modernise how we work. And I think we need to look inside the job rather than focusing on conventional ways of how we understand work and how we understand the traditional working week. You mentioned companies such as Unilever, who have demonstrated that they can meet business targets alongside drops in absenteeism and stress, and help in terms of that work-life balance as well. So we've seen really strong evidence from companies like Unilever, but also companies across the world suggesting it's really counterintuitive to suggest that longer working hours can increase productivity. It doesn't seem to be like that.
We've also seen more e-commerce on the rise. Social media has created a new world of jobs like influencers and so on. What does that mean in terms of the future of the workplace, the future of jobs?
Well, technological change have always influenced careers and the nature of work. And what we're seeing at the moment is another example of that in terms of the labour market. And the labour market has to adapt. With influencers, for example, what's really interesting in there is we're seeing a kind of a workplace in the intersection between what is work and what is leisure time. More broadly, it's another example of portfolio or entrepreneurial careers forms that really embrace a digital workplace context and think about where social attitudes are changing towards work. So I expect, obviously, these sorts of things to be on the rise. Companies are using influencers more and more and embracing influencers in their marketing budgets. So these types of work isn't going away, and it's how we adapt as organisations to deal with that.
Adrian, stay with us. I'm going to come back to you in a second. While some companies have accommodated the remote work option, many others have dug in their heels. But with a shrinking job market in some countries and a changing world of work, many young employees are rethinking how they want their careers to fit into their lives. They're demanding more pay, better working conditions, and they're willing to walk away if their demands are not met. Employees left the workforce in record numbers in the United States and Europe and Asia, leaving millions of positions unfilled last year. The trend was dubbed the Great Resignation. Another phenomenon that was on the rise is quiet quitting. The term describes workers who only do the job that they're being paid to do, just meeting that job description without taking on any extra duties in order to focus on time spent outside the office. And an unprecedented number of people have changed jobs since the start of the pandemic in what's being dubbed the Great Reshuffle. So, Adrian, young employees, as we were hearing there, known as Generation Z, are the main driving force behind the new workplace trends. Why do they feel particularly more empowered than employees of the past?
Well, of course, at the moment, we've got really strong labour markets and a really strong position for young workers in many ways. Gen Z is different. They value face-to-face communication, they're tech savvy. They see diversity as the norm and really have a focus on their own mental health and well-being. But also alongside that, rightfully want good pay and good prospects. And organisations have to react to this. They have to prioritise the desires of these types of workers in order to be competitive in the labour market, offer flexible work, clear development pathways and those sorts of things like that.
In the power struggle between employers and workers, who currently has the upper hand?
Well, currently, industrial relations is a really interesting area for examination. We've got in the UK really high profile examples of workers fighting back, whether it be in terms of industrial action, such as the Royal Mail or train strikes, but even barristers have been involved in industrial disputes. But alongside that, what we've got also is the things that you mentioned before, the quiet quitting and the Great Resignation, where people are really thinking carefully about their jobs roles and what interaction they want to have with work. And all of these things highlight a type of resistance and a changing rhetoric in the power between worker and organisations. And workers, workforces and employers have to respond to poor pay, stress, burnout, unmanageable workloads in order to regain that relationship between organisations and the workforce.
And historically, women have always lagged behind men, haven't they, when it's come to pay or progressing their careers. Is this new generation of women in the workplace changing?
I mean, women leaders are switching jobs at the highest rates and ambitious, and rightly so, women are looking at different ways in which they can get meaning from their work. But I think it's important to point out that women are already underrepresented in leadership and still experience microaggressions and gender equality. And tackling inequality is still a huge challenge for the global workforce. There is still a gender pay gap, which is related to economic, cultural, social, and educational factors. And some organisations really do need to still start thinking about flexible work, how much jobs in their organisations are dominated by males, pay discrimination, and those sorts of things to tackle gender inequality. More broadly, in order to support women in the workplace, we really need to think about how we tackle issues like underutilisation of skills or downward occupational mobility, for example, when women are returning to work after having children. So leaders and managers really have to think carefully in terms of line management practice and policy to support women in the workplace.
A lot of economies around the world are starting to slow down. Recession is being forecast for 2023. Could an economic downturn shift the balance back to employers?
I think the answer to that really is to the extent in which the economic slowdown will take place, whether it's a significant or drastic slowdown or whether it's something which is a little less. For some workers, a temporary economic slowdown won't really change the way that we're seeing. What we've seen is a really big shift in the way workers and organisations are interacting with each other. For others, though, an economic slowdown will change that power relationship between organisations and workers. And it'll be a really interesting thing to monitor as we go through the next couple of years. As I say, what we don't know is how large the downturn will be. But it's unlikely to have an impact on workers fighting back if they continue to experience it in hospitable conditions.
Adrian, really good to talk to you. Adrian Wright, Director of the Institute for Research into Organisations, Work and Employment at the Lancashire School of Business and Enterprise. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Whether it is remote working or an office-based job, at the core of any thriving business is productive employees. Career experts estimate that more than 40% of workers would lower their productivity standards in a toxic work environment, while at least 12% would leave their job due to toxic work cultures. Employees' disengagement costs the global economy almost $8 trillion. That's 11% of GDP, according to the American analytics company Gallup. Anthony LePonteur is a research scientist and associate at the Department of Behavioural and Cognitive Sciences at the University of Luxembourg. He joins me now from Luxembourg. Thank you for joining the programme, sir. Does it really matter if people are happy at work?
Thank you first for the invitation. And yes, it does matter. As a matter of fact, when you are lucky enough to have a job, we do spend actually a large part of our life at work. So it is important to be happy at work because then it will have an impact on our, let's say, general well-being. Then I think from the perspective of an employer or the perspective of a manager, work is also very important because that's positive consequences. For instance, we know that well-being at work increases productivity. We also know that happier workers, they are more likely to cooperate, and they're also less likely to quit. And last but not least, it is also very important from the perspective of policymakers. You know, the governments now are considering taking well-being as a goal on its own. So definitely well-being at work, and I think well-being in general, is actually very important.
According to a pretty extensive survey done by Gallup, they found that job unhappiness is at a staggering all-time high. Why is that?
That's actually a very good question. I think what we have to do in our research is to try to understand what are the determinants of happiness at work, you know, in general, so that we can understand what's happening today. And we know, for instance, that one of the most important determinants of well-being at work is job security. And as of today, we are in a situation where job insecurity is on the rise. We are more and more afraid of losing our jobs. So this might be one of the reasons why we have this increasing trend in job dissatisfaction. I think another is worth mentioning is the impact of teleworking. After the pandemic, teleworking was associated with decreases in happiness. This is what we have found with my team at the University of Luxembourg and some colleagues at Paris School of Economics. So this forces, you know, more insecurity or teleworking, they might all contribute to reduce well-being at work today.
What about pay and remuneration? Where does that fall in the happiness criteria of workers?
What we discovered, and it's even more interesting from my perspective, is that money doesn't matter as much as I was saying before, job insecurity, or it doesn't matter as much as having a good balance between your personal life and your working life. So definitely, and very matters, but not as much as these other job characteristics. It's not so uncommon to see people accepting pay cuts when they change a job, because the new job is more flexible in terms of working time, or because the job is more interesting. So definitely it's important, but it's not the most important job characteristics.
Anthony, we've been talking on this program about the whole phenomenon of working from home that has taken off since the pandemic started. Are workers that work from home more productive because they are happier?
It's actually a very good question, because I think what we learned from our research is that the effect of teleworking is very context sensitive. Before the pandemic, there were already papers, you know, trying to understand whether working from home was making workers happier and more productive. And before the pandemic, these papers were pretty positive. They were saying that, yes, indeed, working from home makes you more happy and makes you more productive. But then we thought about this with my team at the University of Luxembourg and my colleagues at the Paris School of Economics, and we started to think that maybe this effect, this positive effect of teleworking might really depend on the context. And this is why we looked at data at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. Actually, we found the effect of teleworking at the beginning of the pandemic was negative on average. And this is not surprising, because with COVID, many people were forced to telework. You know, it was not a choice. And not everyone had the adequate equipment to efficiently work from home. And when we're talking about teleworking during the pandemic, we also have to think about lockdowns. And so the fact that you had your children and you have all your family that is also at home, and you can't also exercise after, you know, after a day of teleworking, well, you're still at home. So I think the effect of teleworking on happiness at first is very context sensitive. And then when it comes to productivity, well, with the University of Luxembourg, we collected a survey very recently about the opinions of thousands of workers about their productivity while teleworking. And actually, only 25% of them consider that they have been more productive thanks to telework.
So what are your tips to both employees and to managers for what makes a happy workplace?
Well, I think it's a mix of small and big things. I'm thinking about the case of teleworking, for instance. I think at the manager level, it is very important to value your team's efforts and make them understand that what they have been doing is actually valued. Because, you know, when you are a worker and when you're working from home, you don't have this connection with your manager. You don't have this connection with your team as much as you used to have it in person. So when it comes to teleworking, I think really bearing in mind that the efforts of your team are valuable is something that needs to be that a manager needs to bear in mind. Another thing I think that's important is to respect, you know, the boundaries. I'm still thinking about teleworking. For instance, if you are working in a team and you have a very important email to send and it's 8 p.m. or it's 9 p.m., you know, outside of regular working time, I understand that sending the email will somewhat help you sleeping better, because you are going to get rid of this burden of sending the email. But today we have these technologies that allows us to program sending, like, you know, the sending of an email. So if you want to write an email outside of working time, then you can just program it and make sure that it's sent the morning after, so that you don't put the weight on your team. So read very small efforts, these small things to help creating, I think, what it can be a happy and safe workplace.
It's interesting you talked about technology. Is technology making people, the advance in technology, making people happier at work?
It's a tricky question, because I think on one side, we can definitely say that this technology are making us more productive. That is for sure. For me, I'm taking a personal example. Being a researcher, technology helped me every day. I can connect to the internet wherever I am. I can work almost wherever I am. That is not a problem. And this really contributes to my happiness. That is for sure. To know that I can just work for where in the world. But at the same time, I think it's also important to have good practices and to put boundaries when it comes to technology. Because if you synchronize your phone, you know, with your personal phone, with your professional emails, then you never really disconnect with work.
Really good to talk to you. Anthony LaPonta, research scientist and associate, the Department of Behavioral and Cognitive Sciences at the University of Luxembourg. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And that is our show for this week. Get in touch with us by tweeting me at Marleen Saeed, and do use the hashtag AJCTC when you do, or drop us an email. countingthecost@aljazeera.net is our address. But there's more for you online at aljazeera.com/CTC, our website. That will take you straight to our page, which has individual reports, links, and entire episodes for you to catch up on. That is it for this edition of Counting the Cost. I'm Marleen Saeed. From the whole team, thanks for joining us. The news on Al Jazeera is next.